The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan Subscribe and Drive. No deposit, no compromise, no fuss. Find out more at nissan.ie.
Podrick in City West has texted in about Donald Trump. He was a great patriot, says Porrick. He was the only president who gifted the $400,000 annual salary back to the taxpayer. He did not bring America into war. There's a wonderful economy. The reason he lost the election was COVID-19. He would have sailed in only for that. Like I said, a great patriot. It's a pity we do not have a man of his caliber in Ireland. Instead of the PC liberal tree huggers all running around, afraid to say no to a goose. Hail the Donald, the greatest president of all time. Matt Mayer, US public policy expert and contributor to The Spectator. Matt, are you punching the air in agreement there with Porrick?
Not exactly. I mean, Donald Trump did some great things, but Donald Trump also had a lot of warts that, you know, that we had to kind of swallow over the last 4 years. I think on whole, he was more good than not, but he leaves a very, uncertain legacy that history will write in the coming decades.
Okay, so talk me through that ledger then, the good and the bad. What's in the bad side first?
Yeah, well, so the bad side, obviously, you know, they could have done a better job in the handling of COVID, although I think that is overplayed. I mean, the numbers in Europe and the numbers in the U.S. are about equivalent in terms of deaths. And so I'm not so certain that's the point that they made during the election season. But look, he is a divisive guy, and I think he did not create the polarization in America, but he definitely widened it. And that will be kind of part of his legacy. Is the greater polarization we now find ourselves in. He inherited some of that from where the country had been going over the last 30 years. The left certainly widened that themselves over the last 4 years and continue to do so with their actions since the election. But you know, one of Trump's negatives is definitely going to be, you know, a more divided country than where it was, although it was pretty divided when he started anyway.
Okay, then talk me through the other side of the ledger.
Yeah. So look, I mean, you know, before the pandemic hit, we got the virus out of China. You know, the economy was doing great under Trump. The tax cuts had done their job. The regulatory burden that he had lessened on businesses and individuals had led to a huge, you know, growth in the economy and in job growth and the, you know, things like that. I think by getting rid of NAFTA, which was that trade agreement that really hurt the American worker, and pushing back aggressively on China, he you know, got a new trade deal between Canada, Mexico and the U.S. And we got a phase one deal right before the virus hit with China that they've not met their obligations. But he was on his way to getting China to start dealing more fair in the trade world, as well as to stop stealing the IT, the technology and the IP that, you know, Europe and America spend, you know, billions of dollars creating. The Chinese have just stolen, and he was, you know, leading the way to push back on that. So I think that was good in terms of the trade stuff. And then, you know, the courts in America are very important, as you guys may know, and he did a great job of putting good conservative, what we call originalist textualists on the court, who aren't going to create and make up laws that they like. They're going to follow what the text of statutes or the Constitution says, which is very important. And then finally, foreign affairs. I think he, you know, with the Abraham Accords, creating greater stability in the Middle East, I think getting, you know, NATO partners to start trying to meet their obligation to defend themselves so that it's not just the U.S. paying the freight. I think, and, you know, in confronting China, I mean, China wants to do a lot of stuff in the South China Sea and elsewhere. And I think Trump made sure he pushed back on that while getting our forces out of wars we've been in too long and defeating ISIS. So there are a lot of good things out there that you just, you know, you can't overlook. You may have disagreements about how good or bad they were, but he did some good.
Yeah, look, to go through some of them, of course, on the courts, there are people who disagree with his appointments, but he delivered. Sure. He absolutely delivered. He did what he promised, if we put it that way. He absolutely did what he promised. Trade, like you said, look, he ripped up some trade agreements. He entered others. I suppose the proof will be in the pudding. The nature of trade agreements is it takes time for them to kind of peter through and to filter through into the economy. In foreign affairs, you mentioned some of the successes. There was kind of chaos in some elements of foreign affairs, though, wasn't there? Like, we had this nonsense with Kim Jong-un and signing this agreement, it really didn't mean anything, and Kim Jong-un ultimately ripped up. And then this awful press conference at the Kremlin, where Donald Trump stood in front of the world's media and said, "I don't believe my own intelligence services. I believe this guy here beside me, Vladimir Putin."
Yeah, I mean, look, there are definitely some missteps in the foreign policy arena, but I will say, as you know, I think it was a good thing for us to have 4 years of that instability and that chaos and getting a bit away from the Westphalian Davos-centric world that we'd been living in, because I think it became too dependent upon the U.S. too dependent upon, you know, us, you know, catering to dictators and thugs and whatnot across the country. So I actually don't think it was a bad thing for us to kind of scramble the eggs a little bit. You know, we'll see, to your point, Biden can unwind everything Trump has done except for the courts. They could try to pack the courts, which would then unwind that. But we'll see if any of this leads to anything, because ultimately, you know, the Biden administration can now start, you know, unwinding all the things that Trump did, both domestically and on foreign policy, so that that we won't even ever see the effect because it was too short to kind of pan out.
In terms of tax cuts, then, as well, like, there are people who laud the performance of the economy and give Donald Trump the credit for it. I mean, there's others who say, I think, is it about 2/3 of the savings and the tax cuts went to the top, you know, 20% of people in the United States. And also they made the point that actually the economy was beginning to boom. So it wasn't that, you know, and this comparison is often made in that the first year of the Trump presidency compared to the first year of the Obama presidency and how much better performing the economy was. And really, the story there is actually how poorly George Bush handled the economy and how well Barack Obama handled the economy towards the end of their respective terms.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's spin. I mean, ultimately, in the first 4 years of the Obama administration, compared to the first 4 years of the Trump administration before the pandemic, of course, the job boom was far greater under Trump. And I think that's
But he inherited a booming economy as opposed to an economy that was bankrupt.
It wasn't booming.
Everything was trending in the right direction.
We were in a stagnating economy when Trump walked in.
All the numbers were trending in the right direction. It had been stagnating. It had turned.
Well, okay, you're using loaded language. Trending turns. I mean, it was stagnating. Trump got in there. They got the tax cuts. He did the regulatory reforms, and we started seeing real good job numbers until, of course, the COVID pandemic hit. And I think fundamentally, you know, what we have to see is, you know, what would have happened without the pandemic, right? I mean, can you imagine, you know, he probably easily would have run re-election had that pandemic not hit.
Yeah.
Even with all the other stuff he does, he still was doing well from a polling standpoint. But again, fundamentally, you know, Biden can try to now unwind the tax cuts, can try to unwind the regulatory stuff and shift back to a more burdensome economy. And we'll see if the economy performs as well as it was, or if it goes back to that more stagnant approach that we had for most of the 8 years of the Obama administration.
Matt, before I let you go, in 4 years' time, who do you expect to be voting for, Donald Trump or someone else? And if it is someone else, who? Mike Pompeo?
Yeah, so I think Trump is done politically speaking from an electoral office standpoint, not because they'll convict him in the Senate. I just think that's not going to fly. And what's ironic is the over the last 2 weeks, the greatest beneficiary of all this mess actually may be the Republican Party, because it can have the Trumpist agenda without the Trump fatigue and the Trump negativity that comes with the person of Trump. Right. So I expect to see Mike Pompeo have a very strong run, possibly Kristi Noem from South Dakota. Nikki Haley certainly wants in there. Mike Pence may make a run. Those are the four, I would say, are the top ones that you'll see in 2024 for the Republicans.
Okay. All right. Listen, Matt, we appreciate your time. Matt Mayer, U.S. public policy expert and a contributor to The Spectator. Listening to that conversation was Brenda Power, the columnist with The Sunday Times, and Eoin O'Riordan, the Labour TD for Dublin Bay North and the party spokesperson on education. Eoin, you were never shy about expressing your dislike and your lack of support for Donald Trump. Are you willing to give him his dues on his last day in office in terms of, what did Matt talk about, victories in tax, trade, courts and foreign affairs?
I suppose I want to be a little bit reflective. I mean, I think, look, the election is over and there is a result. It's very difficult to give a president a proper kind of assessment on his or her last day in office. Normally, it actually takes 5-10 years to assess their impact. I would have been kind of very positive about Bill Clinton on his last day in office, considering his economic achievements. But in later years, you look back on what he did, and particularly in terms of the incarceration numbers in the States went skyrocketed when he was in office. And I have a very different view of his tenure now. Trump, I think a lot of what was said there is actually quite accurate. He didn't create divisiveness in the States. He didn't create racism. There's about 30 million Americans who listen to shock jock conservative late night talk shows. Fox News obviously has a huge influence on the American mindset. Lots of people like Trump run in every democracy in the world and never get anywhere. But he tapped into something, and obviously he has his talents of tapping into a certain mindset in the States, and it was still quite successful for him with 70 million people voting for him. And I wonder, as was said, if it wasn't for the pandemic, I wonder if he might have won re-election, because just reflecting on it, when you think of the blue-collar worker, the person who always voted Democrat, he had managed a way to convince them that he was on their side. And even on the tax cut element of it, and we find this in our own country sometimes, you can convince somebody that, you know, the rich have benefited more from a tax cut. But if you're a middle-earning, you know, family and you're struggling and you get any sort of a tax cut and you didn't get it before, Trump can point to that. And in a country with an ethos of we all came from everywhere and we're all here to do our own business by ourselves and look after ourselves and our own families, that can be quite appealing.
Yeah.
But obviously the hatred that he spewed, the one thing I won't miss is having the president of America annoying us every day. I just hope that whatever Biden does, good or bad, that we won't have to worry about having the American president sort of dictating our mindset.
As someone said this time next year, we mightn't have Brexit, COVID, or Trump to talk about. What will we talk about? Brenda Power, the columnist with the Sunday Times, is also on the line. Brenda, is that the biggest indictment of Trump? And appreciating Aon's point that it takes a few years to really assess someone's tenure, but that America is a divided country and has been a divided country for some years, but instead of doing anything to heal those wounds, he exploited it.
Really, as generous Aon was towards him. And, you know, we will all miss, actually, I think, the lunacy and the madness that he injected into the news cycle. You know, it's no loss to, not just to democracy in the United States, Kieran, but to the entire globe. And, you know, okay, it's fair to say he didn't create the division in the United States. What he did was he armed it and he weaponized it and he galvanized it and he flung fuel on it. And, you know, I've heard it said, well, at least he didn't start a war. Hello? You have an unprecedented number of armed security personnel at the White House right now and for the past week in advance of this inauguration, unprecedented in modern times. He did start a war. It was a war within his own country. The biggest threat to American national security now is not from outside, it's from inside. That is entirely down to Donald Trump. I was just listening with a certain amount of disbelief there to Matt listing the benefits, for instance, that he created. I mean, there is no question but that the bulk of his tax cuts were of benefit to nobody but his own cohort and the very people he, of course, specifically wanted to favour. The 60% of the benefits went to the top 20% of the richest people. There is no evidence, apparently, according to independent think tanks and analysis, that these have trickled down to any meaningful extent to Main Street, to the blue-collar workers. Did he drain the swamp? No, he didn't. He packed it with the likes of Michael Cohen, the lawyer he paid to pay off a Did he revitalize the Rust Belt? No, he didn't. In fact, there's not only did more industrial jobs apparently leave the United States in his tenure than were created, but also farmers were put out of business because of reciprocal tariffs by China. So, you know, economically, he did nothing any better. No, but hang on. Yeah. There apparently is no evidence that the economy thrived any more under Donald Trump than it did under his predecessors. And the benefits to the stock market, which again, of course, would have favoured corporate America, had been the foundation for that had been set in place by his 12 years of his predecessors.
But yet so many of those blue-collar workers voted for him again and people in the Rust Belt voted for him again. And to what extent are we guilty here of just kind of portraying him as this pantomime villain, this two-dimensional character, and not trying to understand the nuance and trying to understand the appeal?
But you're assuming that there is nuance there. There isn't. I mean, you know.
Trying to understand the nuance of him as a character, but did we fail here to try and ever understand, really understand why people would vote for him? Like there's not 70 million deluded people.
Well, not 70 million deluded people. However, quite a lot of people who were voting for their own personal interest. Obviously, there was huge benefit to his very rich cohort and the people that he set out to advance. And then, you know, look at the caliber of the people who stormed the Capitol last week. QAnon, a lot of them believe that nonsense. I'm sure you know what they believe, that people like Hillary Clinton, Tom Hanks, Oprah Winfrey, Barack Obama are not just pedophiles, but that they drink children's blood to stay in power, to maintain their power, and that when Donald Trump, for instance, wears a pink tie, he is sending them a message to say that he has rescued a child from their clutches. I mean, that's how bonkers they are. I know, Ciarán, you know, it's hard to believe that there could be millions of quite mad people, but, you know, the evidence tends to point that way. They're either deluded or misled or else acting entirely out of cynical self-interest. But, I mean, there is, I cannot see how it will not take decades to unravel the harm that Donald Trump has done, the toxicity that he has infected, not just the American body politic, but the global. Because what he proved was Goebbels' point: the bigger the lie and the more often you repeat it, the more likely people are to believe it.
Oh, that's a depressing assessment of half of an electorate there, Brenda. But, Aon, what will be the marker for a successful Biden presidency then, in your view?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with everything that Brenda has said. I feel very strongly about this man. I called him a fascist on the day he was elected. I've been at every protest.
Everyone's a fascist these days. I've probably even texted in that, here calling you a fascist if I look through them.
I know. I appreciate that. But I do feel, though, that we have to be a little bit more reflective on the reasons as to why people... I met people in the States at around the time of the election, and they were not the sort of stereotypical type that you would assume would vote. I met a dentist who was voting for him. He said, yeah, he's a loudmouth. And I know all the stuff that he says is wrong, but they couldn't in a million years vote for Hillary Clinton. And it gave me a lot of reasons why. And here's another one for you. The Black Lives Matter campaign, which I feel very strong. A lot of us feel very, very strongly about. But then as soon as that jumped to defund the police, that was an open goal for the Republicans, because then you have an average police family who may be very, you know, reasonably thinking and want to do the right thing. And that message can then be twisted to make that blue collar worker think, well, hold on, I agree with Black Lives Matter, but all of a sudden somebody's telling me that I'm going to lose my job or my police service is going to be undermined. So I think we have to be a little bit more circumspect and reflective as to why he was so attractive, because he won't go away. Sorry, he may go away, but the emotions he stirred won't go away. And there was somebody who will step into these shoes. Yeah. Like only 10 Republicans in the House voted for his impeachment. Now, I know it was 10 more than we expected, but only 10, and many of them still within days of having the Capitol building stormed, by a militia in an attempted coup, still had, and it was clear as day that he had incited this, still had a difficulty in impeaching him. What do we get from Biden? I just hope that the presidency isn't as in your face over the next period of time. I certainly think he has to look after those workers who feel that they were let down by Democratic presidents in the past. And he has to think and speak to the reason as to why 70 million Americans. But also, in 4 years' time, I doubt he's going to run for re-election. And I wonder who the next candidate is who can speak to those concerns as to why somebody would vote for Trump.
It is the nature of Donald Trump. We could talk about him till kingdom come. We're unfortunately out of time. I should mention we're going to have live coverage tomorrow of the inauguration, the swearing in of Joe Biden on tomorrow's show. In the meantime, Aon O'Riordan, a Labour TD for Dublin Bay North, and Brenda Power, columnist with the Sunday Times. Thank you both very much for your time here in the show today.